Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast and our Superintendent Series. Today's episode is brought to you by Toro. Golfers get custom fit clubs for longer, straighter shots. Now using the adjustable technology on Toro's new Greensmaster 1000 Series Walk Green Mower, superintendents can dial in operator performance for precise, consistent cuts. The Greensmaster's telescoping handle has five different positions, so the operator's posture will be as perfect as a tour pro's, whether he's tall and skinny or short and husky. And the handle's rubber mounts have just enough cushion to prevent any hand movements from influencing the cut. Sounds like Toro's solved the mower yips. Maybe they can fix the putting yips next. Follow at Toro Golf on Twitter and reach out to your local Toro distributor to schedule a demo. All right, we got a great podcast today. It is almost U.S. Open week at Torrey Pines. So I had a conversation with Rich McIntosh, who is the head superintendent of the South Course at Torrey Pines. I mean, this is a crazy championship. I think this is one of the, you know, something that gets kind of brushed under the rug is Rich, who manages one of the busiest golf courses in America. I mean, this place does so many rounds. It's one of the, you know, five or six most played golf courses in America. It's a municipal golf course, and now it's hosting a national championship. I was out there in March, and Rich's, the conditions were incredible. I mean, go to Torrey Pines, you get country club-like conditions with turf and everything. He does an incredible job, and really excited for him to have all of his hard work on display this week at the U.S. Open. So we talked to Rich just about the, you know, stress and difficulty of preparing a municipal golf course for the U.S. Open, as well as a few things that make Torrey Pines and agronomy there unique, and what we should expect to see at this year's U.S. Open in terms of course conditions and how he got there. So, without further ado, here's our podcast with Rich.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie. I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
So I got to ask you, I was out there for media day, and I felt like I got run through the U.S. Open gauntlet in terms of pin positions. Was that a USGA decision, or was that kind of the revenge of the greenskeeper?
I'd have to look at what the pin location was, but we have one pin position. We do the five different pin locations, and there's one that is just, they just happened to seem like they all got tucked, and it very well could have fallen on that day. But, I don't really dictate any of that. I leave it up to my setup guys, but, depending on the day they're having, they can be tucked a little bit, more than others, but it very well just could have been that location that day.
Yeah. We felt like you guys were beating up on us. We were trying to get us, get expose all of our games. You know, I felt like every pin I was playing the Sunday of the U.S. Open.
I've heard that from people on certain days, and you know, it's like, did you do it because I was here? And I was like, no, I didn't even think about it. So coincidence, it just happened to fall on that day.
Yeah, it was such a juxtaposition because we played Olympic the day before, and it was like it was your typical like Monday outing. Dead center pin on every hole, like just like couldn't put it more in the middle of the green. And then we went to Torrey, and it was just like, oh my god, this pin is just in a really tough spot to get to, hole after hole. So, but it was fun. It was a good way to experience it. So, obviously, Torrey Pines, you're the head superintendent of the South Course there. It is one of the busiest, if not, you know, one of probably the 10 busiest facilities in America. How are you guys doing, you know, working with being a municipal facility heading into the U.S. Open here in a couple weeks?
It's something, obviously the rounds are a big challenge and the amount of rounds that we do. And it's something since I've gotten here that we've really tried to focus on our main traffic areas and good cultural practices with water management and sand top dressing and really working on those areas that were beat up when I got here, just from the constant traffic. You know, your drive ons and offs around greens and beginnings of fairways and around bunkers. I think we've, over the last 4 or 5 years, we've really improved those areas to withstand that traffic. And then, you know, just trying to create a strong, healthy plant across the entire property to where the grass can withstand some more stress than it may have in the past. You know, it's the same thing we do leading up to the farmers in January, is we kind of have to baby everything. We can't get too quick, too fast as far as our cultural practices and really working on the texture of the greens and the surfaces. We got to be careful to not do too much too early. And so, you know, we really just baby the golf course up until, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before. And once we get to that point, then we really start to push playing surfaces and try and get our firmness up and our speeds up. So it's a lot with water management and then just, you know, really focusing on plant health and make sure we're not doing anything that could potentially, you know, put us back or, you know, force us to take a step back or slow down leading up to the advance week and then championship week.
Is there a reduction of play leading in, or is it, you know, pretty much standard day at Torrey leading in?
We have we reduce play, and the cart traffic's a big one too. So we reduce cart traffic to cart paths only. I think we did that about a month out, month and a half out, and then beginning of May we cut off twilight, so no tee times after 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which, you know, it doesn't seem like a lot. You know, it's probably 100 rounds a month, but, you know, that extra traffic in the afternoons really does help us out a lot.
Well, I imagine, too, that that's a great time for your crew to get out and do work, you know, when there's no, because that's got to be one of the toughest things is you're not working at a club where tee times start at 8 a.m. on Saturdays. You know, the tee times start, you know, 20 minutes before the sun's up.
Yeah, no, that has been extremely difficult. And it's something that we've been able to plan for and kind of work through and learn. You know, we really need to front load our morning work, morning maintenance, because in the afternoons we, you know, it slows down, takes 2 or 3 times to do certain assignments. So we do front load the mornings, and then that afternoon maintenance without twilight allows us to get some work done on those first few holes, and then gives us a jump start in the mornings to stay ahead of play. So it does. It helps a lot. You know, we don't, like you said, we don't have closed Mondays. We don't have any closed days. So it is a challenge. 6:18 tee times on the week, and then first light on Saturdays and Sundays. So it is definitely a challenge with those tee times.
I'm curious, obviously you probably, I'm not sure if you guys do the reduced cart traffic ahead of the farmers, but what have you noticed about, you know, going to this cart path only? Like, where has there been any revelations in terms of areas that you didn't see such benefits with having carts, and, you know, the just overall there's obvious impacts of carts, but have you found anything that you didn't expect to, you know, turn up that has turned up with the reduced carts?
Yes. I mean, we do pull back on carts or cart traffic. You know, we do go cart pass only and for the, before the farmers as well. And a big factor in that is our overseed in the winter, and then low light and, you know, not a lot of light in the winter. You know, it rough is a big defense of this golf course, and for us to achieve the density and the height of rough, we need to reduce traffic as much as possible. And the more carts we have out there, and, you know, I'm not a big believer in cart signs in front of approaches. I think it can tend to focus traffic in a certain area, so we kind of just let them scatter. But just, you know, people will, they drive on and drive off in the same areas, just, you know, naturally. It seems like there's some good places. So we don't, it reduces compaction. It allows us to have that dense and thick rough. It allows us to get the height on rough. And, you know, we're dealing with it right now just with foot traffic around greens, some of those walk on, walk offs areas and those tight areas around bunkers and greens. And you know, we put up ropes to, you know, keep the traffic off our areas we're struggling with a little bit, but there's less water inputs, there's less fertility inputs. You don't need that water and that fertilizer to allow or give the plant enough food to recover from all that stress. And I think the biggest thing that we saw in relation to traffic is when we closed down for 6 weeks for COVID, right at the beginning of when it started, and golf went through that down period, at least in California, my assistants asked me if I threw a ton of fertilizer out on the golf course, because it just was growing out of control. And it was, you know, it's like, haven't done anything. You guys would have known, we're not putting any more water out. It's just taking the traffic off the golf course. The plants just exploded with the amount of fertility that we typically keep in, or on the golf course to recover from that traffic stress. So I think that's the biggest thing is, and it's what we really have to watch going into championship week and tournament week for the farmers, is we really need to control our fertility inputs and our growth regulator inputs, because we will see a big jump in growth when we take that traffic off advance week leading up to the tournament.
So it's super interesting. Obviously, you know, people think about like the revenue that's generated from carts, which is obviously a huge part of golf courses. But on the flip side, those carts lead to, you know, costs in terms of water inputs with the fertilizer. And then, you know, there's obviously the environmental cost of that, right?
Yeah. And I don't, you know, it's, there's been a lot of talk in the industry, I think, of all the increased cart traffic due to COVID and single rider carts and whatnot. And we've seen that. I mean, we've deal with that outside of COVID. If someone wants to buy a cart and ride alone, they buy a cart and ride alone, based on that revenue. And, you know, we have electric carts, so I guess we're using a little bit more electricity, but we haven't really seen, if people can ride together in carts, they typically choose to ride together in carts. But it, you know, and you know, I haven't been able to quantify water and fertility inputs. Haven't been able to go that long throughout the year of no traffic or, you know, increased traffic to really quantify those numbers. So I don't know how big of an impact it has or doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, either way, walking makes your life a lot easier, right?
I'd rather walk. Yes. I'd rather walk a golf course than ride, for sure.
The paths out there. You're walking almost more if you walk from the paths out there.
Absolutely.
You know, which is a good thing.
Yep, absolutely.
I want to know a little bit more about your background. What were you doing before you got the, you know, the head superintendent job there at Torrey Pines?
I was first assistant or senior assistant superintendent at Muirfield Village. I think it was 2 or 3 years before I moved out here. And before that, I started at Muirfield right out of college, or right, you know, my last semester of college, and kind of stayed there for up until I came out here. So it was 8 years, 8 or 9 years at Muirfield before coming out here. So yeah, the tournament golf has been in my blood since I got into the industry.
That's got to be kind of a big juxtaposition going from Muirfield Village to, you know, a municipality. Can you talk to us a little bit about the differences in terms of, you know, the superintendent job at a private club versus a municipal facility?
Yeah, talk about two different ends of the spectrum. Yeah, the high-end private club to a municipal, golf course. That obviously your rounds and traffic and whatnot. I think it's allowed me to learn a different side of the business. I've definitely learned more about, I guess, the government side, and politics, and how that, everywhere has politics, right? But it seems like politics in the municipality or government is the politics that we see that run the country, and municipalities and cities all over the place. So it's really allowed me to gain and appreciate the service workers, and how and why we do certain things the way we do in a public municipal setting, and which you can see all the way up to the federal level. But it is different. It's allowed me to learn a different side of the industry and really gain experience across a wide spectrum of the golf industry. But it's definitely different. Both, it has its ups and downs in both sides.
Yeah, that makes sense. With the, obviously the city of San Diego operates more than just Torrey. They have other courses. Do you guys work with the other superintendents within the portfolio of golf courses, or is it pretty siloed off where your facility works together as a north and south course?
North and south. No, we work as a one big team with Balboa Park and Mission Bay. Everything that we go through as far as bids for sand and fertilizer and seed, and then our equipment leases. We're all looped into one big portfolio, and we work together. And we'll have staff go down to those two courses during their airifications, and they'll send staff up here to help out for our airifications and our tournaments. So it is one big collaborative effort, and we'll help them out, and they'll help us out.
What are some of the unique aspects of working on the ocean, how it impacts, your day-to-day job and turf conditions?
Well, right now we're dealing with no sun. So we've been, our May, gray, June gloom is in full effect, and we've been socked in pretty good with cloud cover the last couple of weeks. And it's really, I think coming here and working here for the last 5.5 or so years, you really understand how light water and air, oxygen, really play a part in the health and the growth of the grass. And we struggle. We're not seeing any sunlight. We go out with our fertilizer applications, and you sit there, and it just doesn't seem like it's reacting. And where's it at? And my first year here leading in the farmers was, kind of freaking out, like, I'm not gonna have any rough. What's going on? And then, you take the traffic off, or you get a little bit of rain to push the salts down through the profile and see some sun to get the plant going, and then it just jumps out of the ground. So it's you have to be patient. And it seems like we always get close, and we're struggling in some areas, but then it always comes together. But the salt from the ocean, the marine layer, the cloud cover in May and June, and then we don't see big temperature swings. We're 55 to 60 in the mornings, and we'll get 65, 75 in the afternoons, and you drive 5 minutes inland, and they're 90 to 100 degrees. So it's a very unique climate sitting right on the coast, and the bluffs at Torrey Pines just seems like, I'll drive north or drive south to meetings and come back, and you just see one giant cloud sitting over Torrey Pines. So doesn't seem to ever want to leave us, but we'll get lucky and get some sunlight here and there in the month of May and June.
See, a 55 to 75 sounds pretty good, you know, for a daily basis.
You know, that's whatever, you know, is when you work out here all the time and you're wearing rain pants and long sleeves all the time, you know, you get kind of tired of it. But then you talk to friends back east or up in L.A. and you know, they're dealing with 90 to 100 degrees and 100% humidity or, you know, torrential downpours, you know, they're sitting there getting mad at you. So I just, you know, have learned to stop talking about the weather out here.
You talked about how tournament golf is kind of in your DNA. What's your favorite aspect of, you know, getting a golf course ready for a big tournament?
I think I enjoy the pressure the most, the pressure to succeed, the pressure to perform. You know, it's something that you get to look forward to every year, and it kind of allows you to see all your hard work be enjoyed on TV and by professional golfers that I don't think other places necessarily get to see that. So it is unique. But I think once you get to tournament week, it's all the, you know, the people you get to work with and collaborate with and see year in and year out. And the PGA has been great, and the USGA has been great as well. And working as a team to put on the best event as possible. And I think once you get into tournament week, it's, you're pushing grass to the edge, and you know, you want to, if you're able to, with the weather cooperating, have those firm conditions, have that, those speeds, and you're always trying to push it to the edge. And, you know, it only takes one little thing to go wrong, or one mistake, or one bad decision to send it over the edge. So I think that kind of that adrenaline of pushing it to create the perfect conditions without taking it too far.
Now for a quick word from our sponsor, Toro. For more than a century, with cutting-edge turf equipment and irrigation solutions, Toro has had your front nine covered and your back nine too. In fact, Toro's always had your back, period. Toro is as committed to your long-term success as tour pros are committed to their shot. That's down to top-notch customer service from Toro and its dedicated local distributors, both of whom are passionate about delivering turf equipment and irrigation solutions that solve real-world problems. Follow at Toro Golf on Twitter and reach out to your local Toro distributor today. Now back to Rich. Do you have like a specific moment that really stands out in your mind over the years? It could be from Muirfield, it could be from a Farmers, where it just was like, oh, this is why we put all this work and time into it. Like, do you have a moment that just kind of stands out in your mind?
I can tell you the thing that stands out the most in my mind is my first tournament here, and it was kind of my welcome to San Diego. Mm-hmm. First Farmers, January of 16, play was suspended on Sunday due to high winds and rain.
Oh, the Snedeker win.
Yep. And I came in Monday morning. I think I got here about 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning just to assess the damage. And I drove down from our maintenance shop and saw one tree down and then another tree down, and drove out on the golf course. And I've never seen anything like it in my entire life. And it was, you know, I made a phone call to my PGA agronomist, and I was like, I don't know how we're going to play today. You know, there's trees down everywhere. You know, there's 15, 20 trees down on the south course, laying across fairways in front of bunkers, and God love Mark Russell. You know, he comes out and rules officials come out at seven in the morning to assess the damage, and you know, they just look at it and they're like, oh, we have rules that can, you know, we have rules for this, and you just gotta move this, you know, half this tree off the fairway, and we're good to go. And got the course ready. I think we teed off at 9 and finished later that day. And it was, you know, an eerie feeling with, it was my first event with no spectators on that Monday. Just with the vulnerability of the trees and tents from the high winds that night, course closed down to spectators, and kind of you know, set us up for a COVID tournament and with no spectators on the golf course. Like, yeah, we've done this before. So, but yeah, that one stands out the most.
Yeah. You know, now that I think of it, it's like, since you've been there, there's just been some wild tournaments. You had that one, which obviously, like, all time crazy Sunday, and then, you know, leads into the, you know, odd Monday. And for you, it's just got to, it had to be like an oh shit morning. It makes me think of all those posts. Like, if, you know, if Monday morning was like, that's like the ultimate Monday morning right there.
That was a good one. Yeah, I'll never forget that. And, you know, it's, you know, all the friends and coworkers that over the years at Muirfield, it's, you know, it's the curse of Chief Leatherlips followed me out to California. So, you know, it's, we always joke about that because, you know, that was the, that's the running story at Muirfield every year.
What's that story?
Oh, just, I think part of the golf course was built on an Indian burial ground, and Chief Leatherlips, I think, was the chief of the tribe. And, you know, it's, you'd have sunny week, perfect week, the week before the memorial, and the memorial gets there and you get an inch of rain, or
like this year,
yeah, just untimely rains. And really, I think the biggest one was the President's Cup in October of 13. You know, it was supposed to be one of the drier seasons in the Midwest. And we got to October, you know, great weather leading up, dry, you know, probably the best the course has looked, and firm, and you bounce the basketball on the fairways. And we got to, you know, the event, and we 4 or 5 inches in 5 days. And it was just, you know, it was one of the most difficult events I've ever had to do. But, you know, it's, I just remember one of the tour meteorologists came on. He's like, I've never seen anything like this. We are sitting 200% above average atmospheric moisture right now. It was just like, well, there you go. Only at Muirfield.
Yeah, it's that's funny. It's because then even like last year when they did the back-to-back, it was absolutely perfect for the work day, which wasn't the memorial. And then the week of the memorial, they got weather.
Yep, it always seems to work out like that. And I don't know, the 8 or 9 events I did, I think we got 1 or 2 dry ones. And you know, it's the same out here. It always seems, any course that has a tournament, you know, they just seem to get that tough weather, those tough breaks during the week of the tournament. You know, I've only had probably one good one here where we haven't gotten rain that, you know, puts us backwards on firmness and whatnot. So you always get lucky.
Was that the one that with J.B. Holmes in the fairway?
I think it was. It was, I think it was the year.
Yeah,
was
that Jason Day one? Norn. Yeah. And they had that playoff late into the night.
Yep. We were really firm. The firmest we've ever been for farmers. And I thought conditions were really good. As far as greens firmness and, you know, it was, yeah, that playoff that went into Monday
the
morning.
Oscars.
Yeah. And then, and, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
highest JV TV Holmes ratings though.
Yeah. It's crazy. Cause you had that moment. You had the, you had obviously the crazy storm. You had the Kobe thing happen. And then you've had COVID. It's like you've brought Memorial to San Diego.
It is. It seems like every tournament something's happened. I still remember where I was when the Kobe news came out. But yeah, very eerie feeling set across the golf course. It's almost you heard the murmurs, and then it just got an eerie silence across the golf course. It was. A weird day for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with moving on to, you know, the future here, where we're going to have great conditions in a couple of weeks, but talk a little bit about how everybody sees Torrey all the time. We saw it in 2008, obviously, but how is it, are you expecting it to play differently for the US Open than it does year in, year out for the farmers?
Yeah, I think that you hit the nail on the head. I think the biggest factor and difference is going to be the conditions. You know, we're in a time in California where it just doesn't rain. So we're going to be able to dictate those conditions rather than having to work through weather and rainstorms leading up to the event. So, very cautious of our water inputs right now, making sure we get our deep water in early enough to get us through the week, and really trying to set the greens up to be as firm as they possibly can, and controlling that moisture and the moisture management across the golf course. I think you're going to see firm fast conditions on fairways and greens, and I think that's going to be the biggest factor or the biggest difference than we typically see year in, year out from the farmers. I think rough could potentially, I think we'll see with the mix of grasses we have in the rough right now, I think you're going to see some more, you're not going to see the same lie and all the balls that go in the rough. I think you're going to see some unpredictable lies and really guys making sure, or, you know, not making sure, but thinking, having to think about each shot out of the rough, just with the presence of more cucuya mixed in with the ryegrass and the poa in the rough.
Is that new, that mixture, or is that something we've, seen all through time, just when, with in June, the grass, that cucuya grows a little bit more?
Yeah, so cucuya is warm season grass. That's why we overseed in the winter. You notice it at Riviera. Their rough is based on what type of winter we're having in Southern California. If we have a warm winter, they have more of a thicker standard rough per se, and if it's a cold winter, it's can be spotty as far as heights and consistency. But we see that down here, and it's a big factor why we overseed in the winter for the farmers, and then also just recovery. Cucuya is not growing as much, so divots on fairways, cart traffic, golf traffic, cucuya is just not able to recover like it does right now. Soil temps are up, air temps are up. We've really focused on trying to get cucuya up and going. I think, and I've talked about it with friends in San Diego and up in LA, it's, we always, within a certain miles of the coast, you're always in a transition period. You can maintain cool season grass all year, you can maintain warm season grass all year. So we're always in that transition period. And after the farmers this year, we scalped our rough down to about an inch and a half, just trying to open up the canopy to get that cucuya moving. I think we've been pretty successful. I think you're going to see a good mix of cucuya and ryegrass in the rough, it's going to be a thick and dense rough, but I think that cucuya is going to provide a little bit of a cushion to where if a ball comes into the rough, it could end up sitting a little bit up, or it could drop all the way down to the bottom. So I think you're going to see a lot of inconsistent lies in the rough, which I think will potentially be interesting.
I do too. I think that's one of my biggest, I think what we saw at Wingfoot last year, which is, they do a big restoration, and everybody wants that like monoculture. I think that's the right term. I don't know enough about turf. I just, I know enough to make myself sound like an idiot. That single strain rough is great, but then it becomes very predictable, where if you have a mixture, it makes it more unpredictable and more like what we see in an open championship, where you get that, you don't ever know how that ball is going to come out of that lie.
Yeah, and I think we are going to see that. I've seen some golf balls that have sat all the way down to the ground and the rough, and I've seen some that have kind of popped up and could sit 2 inches off the ground. And I know I struggled trying to hit those different shots out of the rough, but I'm also not a great golfer.
Yeah, or have like a world-class caddy on the back too. Yeah,
that's exactly, you know,
seen every lie in the books. It's you know, obviously you've worked with the PGA Tour your entire career, between Muirfield and then every year at Torrey. How has it been different? You know, what are the different aspects working with the USGA for this championship, you know, in terms of planning and just how you guys work together?
I think the big difference is it's year in, year out with the tour. We're with the USGA. I wouldn't say more planning, but I think we're just more communication between each other. And I try to do that with the tour too. It's, you know, let them know, what's going on, what issues we're having. And my biggest, goal and pet peeve is just to make sure there's no surprises for anyone when they show up that week, which I think goes a long way with everyone. And they're both great organizations. They've both been great to work with. You know, it is a team effort with all of them, or both parties. So I think the big difference, like I said, is it's year in, year out with the tour. So you see those guys every year. They kind of know what to expect. And then, you know, working with the USGA, just trying a little bit more communication, just so they get to know me, they get to know how I act, react, what my goals and issues are to, so we're just all on the same page, and, you know, we're not having to have, you know, any tough conversations, even though there will be some with both. Just trying to keep those open lines of communication, I think, is key.
Yeah, I imagine that familiarity coming year in, year out for the PGA Tour makes it a little bit easier. That's understandable, you know, like than somebody coming in new. And not only, you know, you come here once every, say, 10, 15 years, but you're also hosting, you know, one of the biggest championships of the year. It makes, you know, having to communicate a little bit more, important.
Yeah, and we've been talking for the last 5 years with the, you know, USGA and Jeff and John and Mike Davis at the beginning, and Darren always, you know, have been in communication with Darren for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. So we have gotten to know each other over those 5 years, and it's been a really good relationship. And I think everyone's excited to have the event back at Torrey.
I imagine the infrastructure needs are just like, you know, it's just got to be huge compared. Well, I guess it's a weird year now that I think about it. But like if say we weren't living in a COVID world, the build out compared to a tour event's just got to be crazy.
Yeah, and I thought, so yeah, I transitioned from the Memorial, you know, 70,000 square feet of tents or floors to the President's Cup, which I think we did 120,000 square feet of floors, to the Farmers were upwards of 400,000 square feet of floors, which it's one of the biggest builds on tour. Mm-hmm. So that has been huge in kind of helping me work with operations and the vendors and kind of understanding what's going to happen and what we need to do to help them out and make sure that they're getting done what they need to get done and not getting in their way or causing any issues. I think the biggest, I wouldn't say surprise, but thing that's kind of made me step back and be like, wow, is the back of house. So all the player services, the volunteer, the media, all the tents that go on that are built on the North Course right now. It is a massive production, bigger than what we see for the Farmers. It's been impressive to see and watch, and all the coordination and all the different vendors that have been out and on property over the last month or so, you know, creating a small village.
Mm-hmm. With the course and, you know, over the years you've been there, obviously you guys underwent a renovation. Can you give us a little insight into how it was to work on the renovation and just the overall process of getting that done and at a municipal facility where you want to have as little disruption of play as possible?
It was a lot of fun. It was a big challenge. It was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. I really like doing big projects and planning and coordinating and then carrying out and making sure that we end on budget and on time. And I think Mirfield helped me out a lot with that, with all the changes and all the projects that we did there and the tight window to get it done. I think the biggest challenge here was we never shut down the golf course and we only closed two holes at a time, which obviously runs costs up, but it allows for accessibility and people to
revenue to keep coming through the door. That's like the thing I think people don't understand about public golf courses is like, it's super hard for them to shut down and do an extensive renovation. Like it's much easier for a club to say to the members, all right, we're closed. Like it's really hard to say no to revenue because there's no dues coming in the door.
Exactly. I mean, you're taking a bigger hit than just construction costs at that point. You're losing revenue for the year. And, the project was mainly, we had upgraded the irrigation at Balboa Park. Mission Bay is in the process of upgrading their irrigation and infrastructure. And it was a big upgrade of infrastructure really and modernizing the irrigation and the bunkers and whatnot to allow us to be successful and sustainable for the next 20-30 years.
Mm-hmm. What with you being a municipality, is there anything that, when you look back at the changes you made at Mirfield Village that made the process, just maybe more difficult or more costly outside of just having to do it, by two holes at a time?
I think, closing two holes at a time required a bigger construction crew, and a tight window just to, everything had to be done on one hole or two holes before you moved on to the next one. So you were installing irrigation while you were moving bunkers and installing bunker liners and sand and sodding the tees and the construction areas. So everything had to be coordinated and done on just those two holes before you could move on. And, I don't know that costs were, it's hard to compare the two. Obviously, the two different regions, coastal, like, being coastal, you're dealing with the Coastal Commission. We have a lot of environmental monitors out here as well during the project. So, noise, archaeological monitors, monitoring the wildlife and making sure we weren't disrupting areas where there was protected species. And it seems like the summers, our construction periods always fall around nesting periods for protected birds, so a lot of monitoring, a lot of things needed to be done just to keep the project going. So I think that could potentially cause an increase in costs. But it's hard. Different states, different regulations, and then being coastal is a big big part of that.
With the environmental stuff, I've always wondered, with the canyons there, are there restrictions on the holes playing along them or just where you can get the golf holes out there?
I think there's a number of factors. There is something called an MHPA line, and it's essentially a protected area along the canyons, and it comes in and out of the golf course. And you aren't able to go into those areas, and if you do, you need to mitigate. So you need to, for the number of plants that you affected in that area, you have to replant. I think it's twice as many or three times as many in a different area. So that's an inhibiting factor. And I think a big one is trees. So where You know, unfortunately, we've lost a lot of trees over the years, but, you know, you can't just take down a tree to move a golf hole closer to the canyon. Yeah. So the areas that we have lost some trees, we've taken advantage of it. But the Torrey Pine is extremely protected. And, you know, we've been hit hard over the last 5 to 10 years with the loss of Torreys. So we're really doing everything we can to protect them and to keep the ones that are still there going. So trying to reduce construction around those areas and those trees and to make sure that we aren't the reasons that they are, you know, we're losing them.
Coming down. Yep. Yeah. You talked about how much you enjoy the pressure of tournament golf and setting up courses for it. Did you feel a similar way with the project?
Yeah. Big time. I mean, tight window. We had to be done prior to October to make sure we were able to overseed and start to get ready for the farmers. I think growing everything in, it was a challenge. You know, you opened up a hole that you just put sod down last week. So trying to keep traffic off those areas, trying to put enough water down to grow those areas in, but not too much to where traffic would cause more compaction and more detriment to the areas. And then you're trying to work that texture and those surfaces and the drain lines that have, you know, might have settled a little bit. You know, that winter was a tough one, trying to get the course back to a position where, I mean, the end goal is, you know, when you see it on TV that following year, that you don't notice that there was a project that happened. So that was a lot of stress that whole year.
Unless you're making like big aesthetic changes.
Yeah. Good. Yes. Yes. Everybody notices. Yes. Yes. I mean, we did change a few holes, obviously, and move some bunkers that I think the course obviously looked a lot different. And I think a lot of the changes we did, you know, increased the aesthetics of the golf course and brought some challenges back in. But, you know, just to not notice the, you know, drain lines or settled trenches, mm-hmm. or some of your hall roads, I think was the biggest thing.
With the tees being leveled, was that just, you know, since the last Reese work, it had just, you know, shifted, you know, the tees where it was? And I, one question I have is if the tee, you know, a lot of those tees are built up, if they were built lower, would you have less shift?
I think the biggest thing was just the amount of play that we see. So you tend to, I think you get a little bit of a crown on your tees. Or vice versa.
I think
anybody
that's played golf knows what happens to tees. Yep. You know, yep. You get that little slope and you feel like you can't find a flat line.
Yep. So just trying to get that back from the last time that, you know, I think 2001 was the last time. So it's almost 20 years. And I mean, I think the biggest thing was all our green surrounds, they almost had turned into like bowls around the bunkers. So all that sand buildup, and we took anywhere from 1 foot to 3 feet of sand buildup off the edges of the greens, just from all of the rounds and all of the sand ending up on the faces.
Mm-hmm. What, I got to put you on the spot here. What do you expect the winning score to be? If you had to just guess?
Oh, wow.
We're three weeks out. You know, this is a tough question, the hard hitting one.
Yeah. You know, I'll be happy with a single digit number winning. You know, obviously you like to keep it around even, but these guys are so good anymore. You have one guy that goes off on a week and he, you know, it doesn't matter how difficult the golf course is, he's going to shoot lights out regardless. And I think we saw that with Justin Rose the year he 21 under, and everyone's like, oh, you defenseless guys. Like, well, all the rest of the scores were like 12 under. So it wasn't that easy of a golf course. He just couldn't miss that week. So I'd be happy with a single digit number, and then even happier if it was under 5.
Yeah. Well, hey, I really appreciate the time. I know you're a busy guy, especially at this time of year. And I did, you know, just want to say, I was really, when I was out there in April, so impressed with the condition that you got that place in, given, you know, how much play you get. You present conditions, you know, on par with some of the best clubs in the world, and that's really an unbelievable achievement given, you know, the what you guys deal with play and everything out there.
Well, thank you very much, and you know, I got a great team out here and great staff, and it's good to hear those comments, and you know, I think we just hope that everyone is able to enjoy the U.S. Open and hope for a good one this year.
Yeah, hopefully it comes in the ballpark of 2008, right? Just get in the same stratosphere.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I don't know that. That was one of the best ones ever. It's going to be hard to follow that one up, but we can hope for the best.
All right. Thanks so much, Rich, and have a great couple weeks before the championship.
Absolutely. Thank you.